Have you ever wondered what it would be like to say exactly what you think without fear of cancellation? Rob Schneider, the comedian you know from Deuce Bigelow and countless Adam Sandler films, has transformed from SNL funny man to fierce free speech advocate in his provocative manifesto, You Can Do It. The book has become a rallying cry for those concerned about censorship, with figures like Joe Rogan and Elon Musk praising its courage. Despite his Hollywood success, Schneider risks industry blacklisting to challenge what he sees as dangerous groupthink. In an era when even questioning mainstream narratives can lead to career suicide, Schneider's book represents a growing counterculture movement that values individual expression over enforced consensus. His journey from beloved comedian to controversial truth-teller mirrors America's own struggle with the boundaries of acceptable speech. Rob Schneider's story begins with his mother Pilar's remarkable journey from the Philippines. His maternal grandmother, Victoria, married American soldier Stanley Monroe at 15, only to be abandoned with four children when Stanley returned to America. During the Japanese occupation of the Philippines in WW2, Pilar's brothers Bill and John died tragically, one on the Bataan Death March, the other beheaded by Japanese forces at just 15 years old. Pilar survived by trading homemade pajamas for sweet potatoes. Decades later, through an extraordinary coincidence, Pilar reconnected with her father Stanley in San Francisco, 31 years after his abandonment. Schneider proudly claims his Igorot ancestry from the mountains of northern Philippines, indigenous people once known as headhunters who used ceremonial axes. This heritage, combined with his father's Ukrainian Jewish background, created a unique perspective on American culture. His father, Marvin, grew up in San Francisco, where grandfather Ziggy owned a barber shop where young Marvin shined shoes and performed Yiddish jokes. Marvin later became a real estate broker who defied racial housing codes in the 1950s by renting to black families, once deliberately sandwiching racist neighbors between two black families. These family stories shape Schneider's independent thinking. He describes himself as a traditional liberal who believes in women's rights, gay rights, civil rights, free speech, and body autonomy. Values he feels have ironically become conservative positions in today's political landscape. This evolution explains his controversial stance during COVID-19, when he questioned vaccine mandates and lockdown policies. I stand by my statement that I put God, family, and country before career, Schneider writes, and I believe in speaking one's mind despite cancel culture. This philosophy has cost him professionally, but earned him a devoted following among those who feel similarly silenced in today's cultural climate. History shows that free speech is remarkably fragile. Throughout human history, the ability to speak freely without prompt head removal has been exceedingly rare. A brief 5 years during the French Revolution before the guillotines returned, and America's 230-year experiment with the First Amendment. Of the estimated 108 billion humans who've ever lived, most never experienced this freedom. Even in ancient Athens, celebrated as the birthplace of democracy, Socrates was executed for questioning authority and corrupting the youth through his philosophical inquiries. Schneider illustrates this fragility through personal anecdotes, including his encounters with Donald Trump. While filming Home Alone 2, he observed Trump's vindictive nature firsthand, noting how the businessman would keep detailed lists of perceived slights and actively seek revenge against critics. Later, when judging Trump's Miss USA pageant, Schneider and fellow judges defied Trump's preference for Miss Texas with big tits by crowning a medical student instead. Trump's response, "You're a loser," revealed a temperament few anticipated would reach the presidency. This incident, Schneider argues, foreshadowed Trump's later pattern of attempting to delegitimize any opposition to his wishes. More concerning to Schneider was a conversation with a friend at the National Institutes of Health during the pandemic. This scientist confided that COVID-19 appeared lab-manufactured, but feared speaking out due to potential career repercussions. The researcher described how grant funding, peer review processes, and institutional pressure created an environment where certain hypotheses became effectively untouchable. This incident crystallized Schneider's concern about how quickly scientific debate can be silenced when government and industry interests align, particularly when massive financial interests are at stake. The book argues that we take free expression for granted at our peril. Even in America, where the First Amendment theoretically protects speech, social and economic pressures can effectively silence dissent. When institutions like media, academia, and government align to promote a single narrative, as Schneider believes happened during COVID, the practical ability to question becomes severely limited despite legal protections. He points to numerous examples of scientists, doctors, and researchers who faced professional ostracism for questioning prevailing views on lockdowns, masks, and treatment protocols. We're experiencing a form of soft totalitarianism, Schneider suggests, where you're not imprisoned for wrong opinions, just made unemployable and socially ostracized. This environment creates self-censorship that's perhaps more effective than government censorship because people voluntarily silence themselves. He cites examples from academia where professors admit to avoiding certain research topics or withholding opinions for fear of backlash, and from journalism where reporters acknowledge avoiding stories that might generate controversy. This chilling effect, Schneider argues, is particularly dangerous because it creates the illusion of consensus while masking widespread private doubts and alternative viewpoints. The section concludes by drawing parallels to historical instances where scientific consensus was eventually proven wrong, from the rejection of continental drift theory to the persecution of Galileo, suggesting that today's enforced orthodoxies might similarly fail to withstand the test of time. Comedians serve as society's de facto intellectuals, willing to challenge cultural tides when others remain silent. The best comedians, like Dave Chappelle, Bill Burr, and Chris Rock, hold up mirrors to society, helping audiences make sense of a seemingly mad world. They articulate what many think but fear saying aloud. Throughout history, satirists and playwrights have faced persecution for challenging power. Thomas Kidd was tortured in Elizabethan England. Federico Garcia Lorca was executed during the Spanish Civil War. And Soviet writers like Mikhail Bulgakov and Nikolai Erdman face censorship and exile. This tradition continues today, with comedians often facing the harshest consequences for transgressing unwritten speech codes. Schneider traces stand-up comedy's origins to Mark Twain's storytelling performances, followed by boundary pushers like Mort Saal, Lenny Bruce, and George Carlin. Saal's career trajectory particularly haunts Schneider. After becoming a sensation in the 1950s and writing jokes for both Frank Sinatra and President Kennedy, Saul's career collapsed when he obsessively criticized the Warren Commission's findings on Kennedy's assassination. Labeled a conspiracy theorist, his show was canceled and he went from Broadway to performing at a coffee shop from a wheelchair. Lenny Bruce's fate was even more tragic. Ranked by Rolling Stone as the third greatest stand-up comic of all time, behind Richard Pryor and George Carlin, Bruce broke obscenity rules but paid with his life, dying of an accidental drug overdose at 40 after being blacklisted. He was repeatedly arrested for using words like cocksucker in his act, once saying, "The word cocksucker is not obscene, it's something nice that somebody does for another person. The word war is obscene." Bruce was sentenced to a year in prison for obscenity in 1962. Despite making $3,500 a week at Café Ogogo in Greenwich Village, he was arrested again after undercover cops recorded his set. He faced three charges, each carrying a maximum three-year sentence. His death 8 months after conviction remained suspicious. He was left-handed, but found with the needle in his left arm, and police allowed press to photograph his naked body before coroners arrived. One prosecutor later confessed, "We drove him into poverty and bankruptcy and then murdered him. We used the law to kill him," Schneider writes. This history isn't ancient. It happened within Schneider's lifetime, yet he sees society regressing towards similar censorship. The label conspiracy theorist has become a powerful tool to discredit critics of mainstream narratives. Schneider argues this tactic originated with CIA document 1035960, designed specifically to discredit skeptics of the Warren Commission's findings on JFK's assassination. The document outlined specific strategies for dismissing critics, including questioning their expertise, suggesting financial motives, and implying mental instability, tactics that remain prevalent today. By applying this label, legitimate questions can be dismissed without addressing their substance, effectively ending discussions before they begin. During COVID, Schneider experienced these tactics firsthand when advocating for bodily autonomy regarding vaccine mandates. Media outlets attempted to frame him as dangerous and unhinged, employing a coordinated strategy to make him unemployable by applying the conspiracy theorist label. When they tried to use actress Selma Blair, who was immunocompromised, against him, she surprised them by revealing her son had experienced a vaccine injury, a fact they deliberately omitted from their reporting. This selective reporting demonstrated how media narratives are carefully constructed to support predetermined conclusions while excluding contradictory evidence. The danger isn't in questioning narratives, Schneider writes, but in self-censorship. When we remove ourselves from debate, we allow flawed ideas to take hold. He provides numerous examples where initially dismissed conspiracy theories later proved true, from government surveillance programs to pharmaceutical company cover-ups. While some truths, like 3 plus 2 equals 5, should be beyond debate, many complex issues require open discussion rather than enforced consensus. The author emphasizes how the scientific method itself relies on continuous questioning and revision of accepted theories. Schneider points to racial discourse as a prime example where questioning the prevailing narrative results in immediate labeling and dismissal. He analyzes specific cases where academics and public figures face severe professional consequences for merely suggesting alternative perspectives on racial issues. He argues Western society faces a paradox where racial conditions have never been better, citing increased representation in leadership positions, legal protections, and social progress, yet are presented like things have never been worse. Through detailed analysis of demographic data and social indicators, he demonstrates how achievements like MLK's dream of judging by character rather than skin color are being undermined by those who now explicitly judge people by their racial identity. This pattern extends beyond race to climate change, COVID policies, and gender issues, areas where Schneider believes legitimate scientific questions are suppressed through social pressure and career threats rather than addressed through open debate. He documents numerous cases of scientists and researchers whose careers were damaged for questioning consensus views, even when their critiques were based on solid methodological grounds. The author argues this creates a dangerous feedback loop where researchers self-censor to protect their careers, leading to increasingly narrow and potentially flawed scientific discourse. Self-censorship pervades our culture, from academic circles to comedy. Schneider confesses he removed what he thought was a hilarious closing bit from his comedy special about gender and sexuality because of potential backlash. The culture wars demand silence rather than humor, he writes. It's not about intention, but gaining advantage by silencing perceived enemies. Comedians function as cultural rearview mirrors, reflecting the essence of particular times and attitudes. Their purpose isn't to offend, but to validate collective experiences and provoke thought. Yet today's comedy audiences seem uncomfortable laughing openly, fearing judgment. Chris Rock now prohibits phones at shows to avoid being taken out of context, while Tracy Morgan faced outrage over a wheelchair joke shared without context by people who weren't even present. The concept of punching down reveals what Schneider sees as a condescending view that certain people need protection. Even successful directors like Judd Apatow have complained about comedians mocking our most vulnerable. This perspective assumes hierarchy among equals and positions the critic as a superior savior reaching down to protect the weak. Schneider's experience with the Motion Picture Association of America highlighted another form of censorship, When appealing to get his film The Hot Chick rated PG-13 instead of R, he noticed how movie ratings are more lenient toward scenes of violence than gentle intimacy. A woman being touched on her clothed breasts gets an R rating, while a woman being stabbed in the breasts in a horror film could receive a PG-13. This inconsistency reflects broader cultural values that Schneider finds troubling. Violence is normalized while human connection is restricted. Similarly, certain viewpoints receive institutional protection while others face systematic suppression. The result is a narrowing of acceptable discourse that impoverishes our cultural conversation. Throughout history, crises have been exploited for political gain. Schneider draws parallels between propaganda techniques of Nazi Germany and modern information control during the COVID-19 pandemic. Just as Goebbels used unavoidable billboards to spread Nazi propaganda, today we have push notifications and walking billboards in the form of mask wearers. The COVID pandemic revealed how easily people follow authority. Schneider admits to wearing a fake mask during the pandemic, just pantyhose material that looked convincing enough unless flight attendants looked closely. He points to the absurdity of COVID rules that allowed removing masks while eating or drinking on planes, as if the virus would politely pause its transmission. Governor Gavin Newsom exemplified what Schneider sees as hypocrisy when he told Californians to keep your mask on in between bites while he dined maskless at the French Laundry restaurant, $1,500 per plate. When caught, Newsom apologized, but Schneider notes that politicians only apologize when caught, and the consequences weren't comparable to citizens losing their businesses. The Milgram experiment from 1961 proved that 65% of people will follow authority figures' instructions even if it conflicts with their conscience. Subjects administered what they believed were fatal electric shocks simply because a man in a lab coat told them to continue. This explains the COVID compliance, Schneider writes. Most people simply do what they're told. Schneider connects this to government history of unethical experimentation, including Operation Paperclip that brought 1,600-plus Nazi scientists to America after World War II. He cites the shameful Tuskegee experiment, where the government secretly infected black men with syphilis while offering them free medical exams, meals, and burial insurance, watching over 100 men die even after treatments became available. These historical examples inform Schneider's skepticism toward government health directives during COVID. He argues that blind trust in authority can lead to dangerous outcomes, particularly when fear overrides critical thinking. The pandemic revealed what Schneider calls our society's unquestioning reverence for vaccines, the patron saint of medicine. He notes the irony that 1970s liberals who once said question everything now demand we question nothing when it comes to vaccines, masks, and government health dictates. Schneider traces the vaccine mythology to Dr. Edward Jenner, who experimented on his own 11-month-old child with smallpox in 1797. Early vaccination involved cutting hash marks into arms and smearing pus from cows, horses, or other people into the wounds without sanitation. Everyone got sick. That was standard procedure, and many died, he writes. This occurred during an era of dangerous medical practices like mercury treatments and bloodletting, which killed George Washington. The medical profession embraced vaccination despite its dangers, using orphan children as walking vaccine needles to transport the practice worldwide. By 1853, vaccines became legally mandated in Britain, with fines or prison for non-compliance. Yet when a massive smallpox pandemic hit in 1872, despite near-universal vaccination, the government eventually allowed conscientious objection in 1898. Curiously, as vaccination rates dropped, so did disease prevalence, Schneider notes. He argues that modern diseases like measles show similar patterns. By 1963, when the measles vaccine was introduced, mortality had already dropped 99.8% due to improved sanitation, nutrition, and living conditions, not medical intervention. What actually reduced mortality was better health conditions, fresh food, exercise, clean living spaces, economic development, and indoor plumbing. Western medicine excels at trauma care but fails with chronic illness, Schneider writes. Our medical system consumes 17.3% of GDP, $4.5 trillion annually, yet life expectancy has only increased 4 years in 4 decades. He believes the system should educate people to live without constant medical intervention, rather than keeping them dependent on expensive medications. The only people liberals attack more viciously than conservatives, Schneider argues, are liberals who step out of line and challenge woke constructs. Traditional liberals like Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle, Elon Musk, and Joe Rogan are now accused of being right-wingers, despite their historically left-leaning views and support for progressive causes. You're allowed to speak freely as long as you don't question the dictates of the illiberal Politburo, he writes. This ideological enforcement has created what Schneider calls a cultural protection racket, where artists and thinkers must constantly self-censor or face severe professional and personal consequences. The COVID era revealed what Schneider sees as the viciousness of enforced conformity. Eric Clapton, who suffered severe vaccine side effects that damaged his guitar-playing hands, was viciously attacked not for taking the vaccine, but for speaking about his injuries. Media outlets dug up decades-old comments to discredit him, including controversial statements from the 1970s, while ignoring his extensive charitable work and artistic contributions. Similar treatment was given to other artists who questioned any aspect of pandemic policies, regardless of their scientific merit or personal experiences. Even intellectual Noam Chomsky, long considered a champion of free speech and dissent, showed his authoritarian side, suggesting the unvaccinated should be isolated from society. How can we get food to them? Well, that's actually their problem. Hollywood celebrities became enthusiastic enforcement agents. Sean Penn compared being unvaccinated to pointing a gun at someone. George Clooney demanded mandatory vaccines. Howard Stern said, "Fuck their freedom," and Arnold Schwarzenegger declared, "Screw your freedom." This transformation of cultural figures into ideological enforcers marked a significant shift from their traditional role as challengers of authority. Today's comedians have largely become establishment mouthpieces rather than truth-tellers, Schneider laments. They want diversity of appearance, but not diversity of thought. Those with divergent viewpoints, especially people of color like Thomas Sowell, Clarence Thomas, or Candace Owens, are labeled traitors to their race or gender. This phenomenon extends beyond politics into academia, where professors face increasing pressure to conform to certain ideological positions or risk professional ostracism. The entertainment industry has become particularly hostile to alternative viewpoints, with many artists reporting self-censorship to protect their careers. "I don't want to end up like Lenny Bruce," Schneider confesses, referring to the pioneering comedian who faced persistent legal harassment for his controversial material. "I only wanted to be a comedian. I didn't enter show business to be a free speech advocate." But speaking up against what he sees as the woke attack on Western civilization feels necessary, like confronting a loved one about destructive behavior. He draws parallels between current cancel culture and historical periods of ideological conformity, noting that artists and intellectuals often face the greatest pressure to conform during times of social upheaval. Despite these challenges, Schneider offers more than just hope. "People are hungry for opposing views," he writes, pointing to his completely sold-out club and theater performances across America. "Your voice and right to speak freely matters tremendously." Elon Musk has emerged as what Schneider calls the last tech leader still fighting for free speech, even facing criminal investigation from Brazil's Supreme Court for allegedly spreading disinformation. Unlike other tech billionaires who would compromise, Musk declared, "We are lifting all restrictions. Principles matter more than profit." Standing up comes at a price, Schneider acknowledges, but the cost of not standing up for your freedom is much higher. While he loves making Hollywood movies, what's more rewarding is ensuring his daughters grow up in a free society. Dissent is democracy. Not allowing dissent is tyranny. Freedom of speech faces global threats. Brazil has become what Schneider considers a dictatorship. Scotland has enacted hate speech laws targeting comedians, and Ireland is debating similar legislation. When attacked for speaking out, it's scary at first, he admits, but our founding fathers never said this would be easy. They risked everything. Schneider cites Professor Matthias Desmet's testimony to the U.S. Senate that totalitarian systems require both propaganda from elites and about 20-30% of the population buying into the narrative. This only works when people are isolated, anxious, frustrated, and manipulated through fear. The good news? We have the control to resist by questioning anything designed to make us fearful, Schneider writes. Dr. David Martin notes that during COVID, only a third of the population fully embraced the narrative. Another third was coerced, and a final third refused. Similar proportions to those during the Revolutionary War, which America won. Unlike what he sees as woke ideology, Schneider's Catholic faith embraces forgiveness. Even those he criticizes, like Stephen Colbert, John Oliver, and Howard Stern, he wishes well. He expresses gratitude to his parents, who taught him never to shy away from what's right, his siblings, and comedians who've been kind to him, especially Adam Sandler, whose friendship and generosity have been the honor of my career. Most importantly, he thanks his wife Patricia, the love of my life, for standing by him when the walls were caving in and for understanding that protecting their children means fighting for freedom outside their home, too. And to those who've attacked me over the years, you've only made me stronger, Schneider concludes. If you thought you could knock me down or shut me up, you picked on the wrong Filipino. Speak your mind, America. You can do it.